Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Frances Alonso reporting. Five people were killed near the Libyan city of Misrata Sunday in a suicide bombing claimed by Islamic State militants. The explosives-laden car detonated at a security checkpoint west of the city. In a politically fractured Libya, Misrata is aligned with the unofficial government that controls the capital of Tripoli. Khalifa Gilwell, the prime minister of the Tripoli-based administration, criticized what he describes as outsiders bringing violence into the country. He said, "We will support all army, police, and revolutionary forces to fight and chase those apostates who have come to Libya claiming they represent Islam." He said, "Islam disowns them." China has strongly rejected U.S. criticism of its land reclamation activities in the South China Sea. That's Chinese Admiral Sun Jingu. He told a security summit in Singapore Sunday that construction work is justified, legitimate, and reasonable, and that the projects are for the purpose of providing international public services. The admiral is the deputy chief of staff of the People's Liberation Army, and he asserted that there are no changes in China's claims in the South China Sea, adding there are no changes in China's position on the peaceful resolution of the relevant disputes through negotiation and consultation. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has cut short an international trip after breaking his leg in a bike accident outside Geneva, Switzerland. Kerry was hospitalized Sunday after being flown by helicopter to a hospital in Geneva after the accident. The State Department said Kerry did not lose consciousness and is stable and is expected to make a full recovery. VOA News. An Egyptian-American prisoner freed by Egypt after it jailed him for nearly 2 years for his alleged involvement in the outlawed Muslim Brotherhood has returned to the United States. Frail-looking Mohammed Sultan was embraced with tears and hugs from relatives and friends as he has arrived Saturday at Washington Dulles International Airport. Cairo authorities forced Sultan to relinquish his Egyptian citizenship before allowing him to leave Egypt. Burundi's president will not attend Sunday's emergency summit of the East African Community Heads of State on the political situation in Burundi. The summit in Dar es Salaam is scheduled to be attended by leaders from Uganda, Tanzania, and Kenya. The president of Rwanda is sending a minister to represent him at the summit, and Burundi will be represented by its foreign minister. A spokesman for President Pierre Nkurunziza told VOA that the president is now focused on the election campaign. The Central African Republic's interim president is pleading with the international community to help the war-ravaged country. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
CAR's interim president, Catherine Samba Panza, says after a May summit bringing together 700 representatives from political parties and civil society groups, she believes it is imperative to give an accounting to the international community and CAR's diaspora. The gathering was intended to clear the way for national elections expected in August to end CAR's two-year political crisis. However, Mrs. Samba Panza says humanitarian crises continue to batter her country and CAR remains far from stable. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
A leading U.S. newspaper says the rebel group that seized power in Yemen has at least four U.S. prisoners and efforts to secure their release have faltered. The Washington Post reports the Americans are believed to be held at a prison in Sana'a, the capital of Yemen, the site of frequent bombings by a Saudi-led air campaign designed to dislodge the Houthi rebels. The newspaper says one of the prisoners had recently been cleared for release, but the Houthis reversed their decision. Police in Singapore say they fatally shot one man and detained two others when they crashed their car through barricades early Sunday near the venue of a high-level regional security forum. The incident occurred near a hotel that was hosting the Shangri-La Dialogue attended by the U.S. Secretary of Defense Ashton Carter and delegates from various countries. The event was uninterrupted. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
The need for fundamental electoral reforms is not just my call. It's a unanimous voice coming from the whole country.
Ugandan lawmakers demand electoral reforms ahead of next year's general election.
I was very touched by the fact that he spoke about how rich this country is and his intention to use the resource from this country instead of depending on the external.
A former Tanzanian prime minister launches a campaign to become the presidential candidate of the ruling party.
She says the most important thing is for the international community to continue providing humanitarian and financial resources.
And the leader of the Central African Republic pleads with the international community to help develop her country, which is devastated by conflict. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza is not attending today's emergency summit of the East African Community Heads of State on the political crisis in his country. The summit in the Tanzanian commercial capital Dar es Salaam is scheduled to be attended by leaders from Uganda, Tanzania, and Kenya. My colleague Edward Rema from the VOA Central Africa Division is currently in the Burundian capital, Bujumbura, and joins us live via telephone link up. Good evening, Edward.
Good evening, Peter Clotty. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you very much. Now, President Nkurunziza skipped the Heads of State Summit saying he's campaigning. What are you hearing on the ground?
Actually, Peter, what I'm hearing right now is that the summit of the East African Community Heads of State has just ended in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. And one of the major resolutions that was reached was to postpone the elections for at least 1.5 months here in Burundi. Right now, the anticipation here in Bujumbura was so high, and people are expecting either the meeting to take a very tough and strong stand against the re-election of President Pierre Nkurunziza. And the city was calm today. You could see a heavy presence of police and the army. But besides that, things looked very calm today here in Bujumbura, the capital of Burundi, Peter.
Eddie, what is the immediate reaction of Burundians, especially in the capital, following this resolution that was passed by heads of state at the EAC summit?
What I'm hearing, especially from the civil society and the opposition, they're saying for them the matter of elections, extending the election, wasn't so much something that they were expecting. For them, it's all about stopping Pierre Nkurunziza for re-election. Whether they're postponing the election or not, they don't seem to be budged by that. They were expecting the East African community to speak out against the re-election rather than the time span under which the election should take place.
Now, the civil society groups petitioned the East African leaders to intervene immediately before the crisis escalates into ethnic cleansing or possible genocide. Following the recent bomb blast and the killing of Zedi Feruzi, the opposition leader, some are claiming that they want to boycott both the legislative and presidential vote. What is the situation at the moment?
The situation at the moment, because the news of the postponement of the election or the request by the East African community to have the election delayed for at least 1.5 months is just coming in, it's just trickling in. so most people haven't been able to really understand or read through all the lines on what the legalities and why the East African Community Presidents decided that this is the stand they should take. But right now, like I said, the news is just trickling in. We haven't gotten enough reactions from either the civil society or the opposition. But one thing for sure is that most of them have been saying that they're not going to take or participate in the elections as long as President Nkurunziza is still on the ballot. So right now we haven't gotten enough reactions yet, but their position has been won. They're not going to go for election as long as President Nkurunziza is running.
Have they come out of their hiding places, especially following the assassination of Zedi Feruzi, because they said they are targets now since they oppose President Nkurunziza's re-election attempt?
Yeah, most of them have been targets. Most of them are in hiding. Others have even fled the country. Leaders such as Agathon Rwasa, who is the head of the FNL opposition leader, has been saying that he's on target. Right now, I can't say that they are out of the hiding, because recently when they were having a dialogue which was mediated by the United Nations office here, one of the major things the opposition was asking was to have the government lift all the arrest warrants that have been imposed on them.
Now, how is the negotiations between the government and the opposition groups going so far following the recent happenings and the fact that the talks were restarted recently?
When we spoke to Said Djinnit, who is the UN Special Envoy here in Burundi, he said that they had stopped the negotiations temporarily until they hear what the East African heads of states recommendations were going to be. But one of the major issues that one would say continues to be a problem, and where both sides don't agree, the opposition is calling for President Nkurunziza to withdraw his candidacy for the next for the June elections, whereas the government is asking the opposition to stop demonstrations. So right now, there hasn't been any breakthrough in as far as those two major issues are concerned. And until there's a major breakthrough, that's when we'll expect a little bit the country to get back to its business as usual.
Thank you very much. Edward Rema is a reporter with VOA Central Africa Service. He joined us live from the Burundian capital, Bujumbura. A prominent opposition leader says Ugandans will no longer tolerate rigged elections after what he says have been years of voter irregularities and polls that are skewed in favor of President Yoweri Museveni and his ruling National Resistance Movement. Uganda is scheduled to hold a general election next year. Chisa Besigye told me that there is a need for electoral reforms to ensure an equal playing field for opponents of the NRM before elections are held.
Well, first of all, the need for fundamental electoral reforms is not just my call. It's a unanimous voice coming from the whole country. All the proposals that have been tabled before the parliamentary committee have been all pointing at the need for fundamental electoral reforms. So it is clear that unless some fundamental reforms, a restructuring of the state, is undertaken to make sure that we have independent state institutions, there will be further chaos in our country.
Dr. Besigye, there have been issues where the government has proposed electoral amendment to ensure people are on equal footing or equal platform or the same platform during and after elections. Why do you think that is not enough?
There have been some cosmetic changes here and there, but the fundamental things that need to be addressed have not been addressed. So once you don't have an electoral commission that is independent, you cannot have a process that is credible for all parties. You have the military and security institutions still influencing and interfering with all the electoral processes that we've had. And so there are many fundamental problems that need to be dealt with. Yet there is no time to deal with those problems before the next election, which is slated for February, March next year. Therefore, anybody recommending that there needs to be creation of time to undertake these fundamental reforms is saying something that is obviously needed. The reforms should not be bound by the time that there is, because it is the absence of those reforms that have created untold suffering to our country. The five-year bitter war that was led by General Museveni took place immediately after the 1980 elections. The takeover by the military in 1971 happened on the eve of the elections. So it is critical, if we are to avert further catastrophe for this country, that we take time and undertake reforms, comprehensive reforms, and then have free and fair elections.
Dr. Besigye, some people are suggesting that calling for the postponement of the election by itself undermines the very constitution that some of you are advocating to be upheld by President Museveni. Anything short of that is undermining it. What is your take on that?
Well, first of all, understand that the constitution has been at the heart of our problems also. We have had constitutions made by sitting executives, and they go with those constitutions. And that's why it is important that we take time to have a constitution that is broadly accepted by the population of Uganda. Today, you have a constitution where a lot of powers are heaped in the office of the president, and you have also a constitution that demands that only through free and fair elections can you have a president. But we have not had any free and fair elections. So anybody who insists that we go forward and have whatever type of election is also undermining the very constitution, which only provides for a free and fair election. So it should be understood that we have a crisis, a political crisis in our country, and therefore we need extraordinary measures to manage that crisis. You cannot have a transition from a system that is discredited to another one using the very framework of the discredited system. It is like saying that the apartheid laws should have been used to transit South Africa to a democratic society.
The supporters of the NRM are saying that because the opposition groups do not get what you want by the proposal made by the administration, that is why you're calling for the elections to be delayed or postponed, for that matter.
It's not our core that it has never been our demand that elections should be postponed. And we are not responsible for bringing bills to parliament. It is the government that brings bills to parliament. This bill that is before parliament came after the electoral process had begun. The update of the voters' register is already complete, even before the bill before parliament has been discussed.
Chisa Besigye is a prominent Ugandan opposition leader. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. Former Tanzanian Prime Minister Edward Lowassa, seen as frontrunner to become the next leader, has launched his campaign for the ruling party's presidential nomination. The Chama cha Mapinduzi, or CCM party, has ruled since independence, and the fractious opposition is not expected to challenge its position in a parliamentary and presidential vote on October 25th. For more, I reached David Monsojo, a CCM activist who was in Arusha, to tell us more about Lowassa's presidential campaign launch.
I thank God I happened to be one of the viewers of the event yesterday, and I followed up his speech very well. And what I got from him, his speech was actually spoke about so many spheres as far as our country is concerned. He spoke a little bit of economy and political as well. So in economy, as I was very touched by the fact that he spoke about how rich this country is. and his intention to use the resource from this country instead of depending on the external, the donors. So he actually spoke that his government is expecting, when he's become one, to use more of our resources to improve people's lives so that this country can go somewhere from where it is right now.
What are the prospects that he is going to win the nomination of the CCM?
Well, I'm not very good in the political analysis, but as a viewer, as a citizen, the way I saw the event yesterday could tell that people, they accept him. There was a number of people. There was a multitude. There are so many people in the ground. So this shows this guy is really accepted. Like today, so many people, they are discussing about the event as well as his speech. So we believe he has a great chance to be one.
Critics say that the people who came to witness his coming out to seek the nomination of the CCM were bust or bought because the man is rich. So they paid for them to be there. What do you say to such critics?
Well, you could see the facial expression of people, how they received his speech, as well as the event, how people are happy to receive him to become a presidential candidate. There is a lot of things people would say. You know, this is a political game. They would say a lot of stuff that people are coming from different places who are paid for, but I don't think that thing happened.
The CCM has had policies to be implemented by successive government. If successive government have not used the natural resources to better the lives of Tanzanians, why should Tanzanians have the confidence that former Prime Minister Lowassa, who has been in government for a long time, will do anything better than his predecessors from the same CCM party?
What I know is everything can be done by someone by intention. How did you intend to do something? And the ability also, ability to see opportunities, ability to use opportunities. I think we differ by character, by talents that we have. We differ somehow. So I believe this guy has a great talent. I believe when he was a prime minister, he did a lot of stuff. He did so many things, he achieved a lot. And if he'll become a president, I have a hope that this country can go somewhere else from where it is now.
He was accused of dabbling in corruption, and that is why some of his critics say he is not worthy to lead the country because he is tainted with corruption. What do you say to that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to congratulate him because he took the collective, it's collective responsibility. He just took responsibility of his office, even if he wasn't the one directly. But since these things happened when he was in the office and in charge, different charge, he took the responsibility. I think this is the sign of a good leader. If you find something went wrong in your office, you just take the responsibility. Who will take it if it's not you? I think that's an example, a great example for a leader in Africa.
David Mwamsojo is an activist of the Tanzanian ruling Chama Chama Pinduzi, or CCM party. He spoke with me earlier from Dar es Salaam. Central African Republic's interim president is pleading with the international community to help develop the war-ravaged country. Catherine Samba-Panza says although there are high prospects for peace to return, the humanitarian situation in the country remains a major problem. For VOA, Moki Edward Kenzeka has more from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
CAR's interim president, Catherine Samba-Panza, says after a May summit bringing together 700 representatives from political parties and civil society groups, she believes it is imperative to give an accounting to the international community and CAR's diaspora. The gathering was intended to clear the way for national elections expected in August to end CAR's two-year political crisis. However, Mrs. Samba-Panza says humanitarian crises continue to batter her country and CAR remains far from stable despite the presence of 8,500 UN peacekeepers in Bangui.
Je suis donc allé mobiliser la communauté internationale sur la nécessité de continuer à nous soutenir pour que nous
She says the most important thing is for the international community to continue providing humanitarian and financial resources. She says without such help, it will be difficult for elections to be organized. Mrs. Samba Panza has been serving as interim president since January 2014. She says all Central Africans she met in Cameroon and other countries she visited are anxiously waiting for elections so their country can return to democratic law and put the period of sectarian killings behind them.
J'ai été très honorée par l'accueil qui m'a été réservé au Cameroun, précisément par la commune de Douala.
She says the massive turnout of CAR refugees to receive her in Cameroun's economic capital, Douala, is a strong indication that everyone wants peace to return to CAR so they can go back and contribute to the development of their country. Last month, the UN called on the international community to send aid to the country's population. But so far, international donors have contributed just $83 million in aid out of the estimated $604 million required. The UN reports that 460,000 people have fled CAR to neighboring countries, and an estimated 440,000 people, mostly women and children, are internally displaced. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Zimbabwe and the United Nations have signed a $1.6 billion four-year development aid package to boost various sectors, including food production and high prevention. For VOA, Irene Chifera has details from the capital, Harare.
Meshack Svanda, Chief Secretary to the President and Cabinet, signed the agreement on behalf of the government while the United Nations was represented by Resident Coordinator Bishop Barajuli. The development package will support six national development priorities, including food and nutrition, gender equality, HIV and AIDS, poverty reduction, and natural resources value addition, public administration and governance, and social services. Svanda said Zimbabwe was grateful for the assistance as it comes at a time when the country is experiencing economic problems. He said the financial and technical support will help Zimbabwe achieve its development goals. Most importantly, Svanda said the aid will be channeled through Treasury, unlike in the past when such assistance was sent directly to development partners.
Now they are putting their money towards the voters' fund. So in other words, it's going to buttress our development trust rather than not supporting our nation.
He said, unlike during the inclusive government, when the UN focused on humanitarian assistance, it is now focusing on development. Svanda was optimistic that the move by the UN will influence other donors to follow suit.
We think this is heralding the first initiative of pushing other donors to follow.
Parajuli said the assistance shows that the UN is committed in assisting Zimbabwe. A development worker, Anna Svanda, tells Studio 7, while the move by the UN is welcome, she fears the funds may be abused.
I think it goes a long way, but it's a bit tricky as I see it, because of late the government has not been transparent in using these finances to develop the nation at large.
Economist James Joa said channeling financial assistance through the government in the near future is a clear indication that the UN now recognizes the ZANU-PF government. He said mechanisms must be put in place to ensure the funds are used for the intended purposes. The UN has spent $1.6 billion in development aid to Zimbabwe in the last 4 years. From Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
When news is happening,
VOA Africa is there.
Mohamed Yusuf of VOA News, Nairobi.
Victor Beatty, VOA News, Washington.
Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Joburg.
Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
VOA correspondents take you right to the center of events as they're happening. And this is where you hear it all on VOA Africa.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, sports with Shegun Ademi from the Nigerian commercial capital, Lagos, and music from our African collection. And that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sport, and for that, let's go to Nigeria and join Shegun Ademi. Good evening, Shegun.
Good evening, Peter, and good evening, Africa. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports for Sunday, May 31st. It was a bittersweet start for Africa on Saturday at the 2015 FIFA Under-20 World Cup in New Zealand. Four countries are representing Africa at the two-yearly tournament. They are Ghana, which is the only African country to have ever won the tournament, Mali, two-time runner-up Nigeria, and Senegal. Three of the African representatives were in action on the opening day, that is Ghana, Mali, and Senegal. While Mali won its opening game, Ghana played a draw and Senegal was defeated. Mali took an early lead in Group D after a 2-0 win over Mexico. The match was won and lost in a crazy second half, in which three players were sent off before two goals in 3 minutes decided the outcome. In Group B, a stoppage-time penalty from Yor Yeboa denied Austria the first big upset of the tournament. Ghana snatched a 1-1 draw from the jaws of defeat. The 2009 champions had looked set to emerge empty-handed against Group B opponent Austria, which had earlier taken the lead. And Portugal overcame Senegal with a dominant 3-0 win in Group C. Staying with football, Sierra Leone, Mali and Uganda are through to the third and final qualifying round for the 2015 CAF Under-23 Championship to be hosted by Senegal. The championship is the qualifying tournament for the 2016 Olympics in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. The top three teams at the final tournament scheduled for November 28th to December 12th we qualify automatically for the 2016 Olympics. The fourth place team will engage a nation side in a playoff. Four more third round places will be determined today, Sunday. In more football news, Namibia was crowned COSAFA Cup 2015 champion after defeating Mozambique 2-0 in the final of the regional championship in South Africa on Saturday. Pacey winger Dion Hotto was the hero of the match, scoring both goals as Namibia claimed a first-ever Southern African title. Mozambique's young side had its chances in the game. They could not match the greater experience of the Namibians. Madagascar finished third after beating Botswana 2-1 in the bronze medal match. In other news, Sepp Blatter has said that the events in the run-up to his re-election as president of World Soccer's governing body, quote, do not smell right, unquote. He said he was the victim of a hate campaign on the part of European soccer's governing body, UEFA. Blatter implied that it was not just a coincidence that Swiss police arrested seven leading soccer officials, including FIFA Vice President Geoffrey Webb, 2 days before the FIFA Congress and presidential election. The seven have been detained pending an extradition request from the United States, where they are wanted on corruption charges. The arrests were connected to a bribery scandal being investigated by the US, Swiss, and other law enforcement agencies that has plunged FIFA into the worst crisis in its 111-year history. No one is going to take it off me that it was a simple coincidence that this American attack happened 2 days before the elections of FIFA, Blatter told the RTS Swiss television channel in an interview. Meanwhile, FIFA is taking action to ease the fears of sponsors over the corruption scandal. Credit card giant Visa had said it will reassess its sponsorship for FIFA unless it starts rebuilding a culture with strong ethical practices. Even after Blatter's re-election on Friday, Coca-Cola called for concrete action to begin winning back the trust it has lost. Blatter told the press conference, quote, "We have had contact with the sponsors last week when such declarations came. We have exchanged letters and we start to bring back the reputation of FIFA," unquote. Finally, boxing. Ghana's professional boxer and former world champion Joseph King Kong Agbeko returned to the ring for the first time in over 13 months to defeat Juanito Rubila by a fourth-round technical knockout on Saturday in Texas, United States. The bout was stopped by a cut ruled to be from a punch. It was Agbeko's first fight since his December 2013 loss to Guillermo Rigondeaux. Rubila has now lost 4 straight and 10 of his last 11 fights. The Ring magazine currently rates Agbeko, who is 35, at number 6 in the bantamweight division. That ends it for this weekend's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Thanks a lot for listening. I'm Segun Adeyemi in Lagos. Now sending it back to Peter Klote in Washington.
Thanks a lot, Segun. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African Sports Nightline, Africa Sports. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Logo Bagisa. Hey! fini, oh. Le coin est gâté. Laissez vos ordures dans la poubelle.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one more point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Good evening, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Once again, a prominent personality who has been enormously scrutinized and criticized by the media, mostly the Western media, has prevailed against his determined detractors. Sepp Blatter, 79, and a man who has been at the helm of FIFA for 17 years, was able to win the nomination and confirmation for an extraordinary fifth term by the FIFA Congress in Switzerland. Blatter was able to achieve that result because of the staunch support of African, Asian, and Caribbean Football Association. He was able to obtain 133 votes after 209 against 73 for his sole opponent, Prince Ali bin Hussein, who received most of his votes from the Western Football Association. Although the supporters of Blatter are aware of corruption within FIFA, they were concerned about the timing of the revelation and also the fact that it came 3 days before the voting in Switzerland. As you may be aware, the United States newly appointed Attorney General announced on Wednesday that prominent members of FIFA executives have been arrested through the aid of the Swiss authorities, and that others have been indicted because of massive corruption. In announcing the result of the investigation, the Attorney General was careful to limit it to the issue of money laundering. The announcement by the Attorney General was followed by a massive, and I repeat, massive Blatter bashing. And for many of the African, Asians, and Caribbean members, it appeared to them that everything was calculated to prevent the reappointment of Blatter as president of FIFA. In fact, many of the European Federation and government officials publicly criticized Blatter and called on him to resign. Even Prime Minister of Great Britain called on Blatter specifically to resign, and this was followed by other Western officials. Platini, a friend of Blatter and head of UEFA, also said he could not support Blatter. But Blatter refused to budge and went on for the elections. Now there is something which should be brought into the discussion. Who authorized Switzerland to engage in an investigation as to why the Football World Cup hosting was given to Russia for 2018 and Qatar in 2022? The question is, even if one is going to hold an investigation, why only stop to these two countries? Why not extend the investigation to the time when Morocco lost to the United States the staging of the World Cup in 1994, when many Africans doubted the result of that election? Why not also examine how South Africa received the holding of the elections for 2010? Because all the members indicted were all prominent members of FIFA at that time. And in terms of the allegations which were announced by the Attorney General, it came as a shock to many South Africans, and I must say to many Africans. When FIFA designated South Africa as the host for the 2010 World Cup, it was a unanimous view that it was due mainly to the charisma and respect the world held for the former president of South Africa, Nelson Mandela. But now they are being told that they received the accolade only because there was some bribery between the South African government and some of the members of the FIFA executive. Most supporters of Blatter want to wipe out corruption, but they are also worried that in the Western media, there is a kind of double standard. They show the spotlight whenever corruption allegations are made against people from the third world. And by the way, most of those who have been arrested are from the third world, but tend to cover up when corruption involves Westerners. For example, a week or two ago, there were reports in the press that some bankers conspire to currency manipulation and they were fined for this corruption. But no one heard who these people were, and there were no calls at that time for any head of the banks to resign. This has been also a problem in the United States since the 2008 collapse of the banks. Today, many citizens are worried. Why has no banker gone to jail since that time? So the issue really is not corruption, but that it has been very much an unbalanced situation. But there is a lesson, and the lesson is that the Western media has to realize that the world has really changed. The days of imperial rule and imperial fiat has long gone. It is true that many of the structures which were put together after the Second World War, such as the Bretton Woods and the five permanent members of the Security Council, are still in place. But they must understand that the natives are circulating the wall and they are trying to enter, and nothing could stop them. This is what really has happened in the Congress in Switzerland. It is not the time for UEFA to pull out. It is regrettable that there is such a split between Europe and the rest of the world within FIFA. Time for them to realize that the world has changed and that others should participate in the decision-making, whether it is on football or on economic matters or in the maintenance of international peace and security. I thank you.
Thank you very much. That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, sports editor Segun Ademi, and engineer for today, Michael Dubinsky, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, every river knows where its water will not be soaked up into the earth, and that is where it flows past. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Renewed fighting in South Sudan has forced thousands to flee their homes in recent days. Some 650,000 civilians reportedly are without access to aid. Civilians remain caught between government troops and opposition forces. With more than 20,000 people fleeing to UN bases in the northern towns of Malakal and Bentiu over the last few weeks, these sites are becoming overcrowded and intercommunal tensions are escalating, the aid group Doctors Without Borders said. Meanwhile, the rainy season is underway in South Sudan, increasing the risk of diseases like cholera and malaria. The United States condemns the intensified fighting and violence in Unity, Upper Nile, and Jonglei states in South Sudan by the Sudan People's Liberation Army, the armed opposition, and forces led by General Johnson Alani. This fighting has displaced large populations and devastated the lives of civilians. We call on all armed groups to immediately halt offensive actions taken in contravention of the January 2014 Cessation of Hostilities Agreement. Violations of humanitarian norms by all sides are unacceptable, including the outright targeting of already vulnerable civilians, especially women and children, grave human rights abuses, and violations of international humanitarian law. The international community will hold those who perpetrate these serious abuses to account. We call on all sides to give up arms and permit the UN mission in South Sudan to investigate the sites of alleged human rights abuses and other violations of international humanitarian law, and to grant humanitarian workers free, immediate, and unobstructed access to all conflict-affected communities. The human, social, and economic costs of this war have been devastating, and the long-suffering people of South Sudan now will bear the brunt of the long-term consequences of continued fighting. Any damage to South Sudan's oil infrastructure is an additional peril that jeopardizes the future efforts of South Sudanese to rebuild and develop their young nation. These resources belong to all South Sudanese people. The needs of the many have to come before the political ambitions of a few. The United States will continue to work with our partners to ensure a hopeful future for all South Sudanese citizens, and we will continue to condemn those who intentionally put that hopeful future at risk.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.